like to settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
Go on the run. Hi everybody, Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby back on for another edition. Tonight's program is going to be part two of Women of the Fugitive. And, you know, speaking of Women of the Fugitive, there's, oh, well, I was going to say there's one Woman of the Fugitive that's AWOL, but I think I heard a correction. If you want to be on the program tonight, the phone number is 800-407-KSAV. If you want to participate by email, during the broadcast only, talk@ksav.org. If you want to contact the hosts any other time, fugitive@ksav.org. All right, for this week, for something different, since it's Women of the Fugitive, we will start off with the Woman of the Fugitive group, Kitty. You go ahead.
Well, hi.
I like your timing, too.
Perfect. Oh, yeah, well, you know, I like to make an entrance.
Make an impact.
Okay. Well, I think I'll start off first by reading this email from Liv in Norway. She writes, "There is something that I have noticed that has bothered me quite a lot while watching the first season of this series. Many of the women have been portrayed as extremely stupid, spoiled, greedy, or hysterical, and some of them even wanted to go away with Kimball. There are several examples of this, like Chris Polachek in Where the Action Is, the female kidnapper Helen in Never Stop Running, Marcy King in Storm Center, Dorena Pruitt in The Homecoming, and Sophie in Somebody to Remember, just to name a few. So I'm thankful that there are at least a few heroic women like Wilma Springer in Northoak and Paula Decker in Search in a Windy City who manages to do the right thing despite her drinking problem." And I think that this really goes or dovetails into our list. She really hits the nail on the head when she says that there are women that are stupid, spoiled, greedy, or hysterical, and some of them even want to go away with Kimball, because I think that hits practically at least one quality in every one of these women that we're going to talk about. The first one being Carol Willard, who plots with her sister's husband to kill her and steal her inheritance in the garden house. And the sister's name is Anne Guthrie, who is the would-be victim of the plot in the garden house. And yeah, I thought that that Anne Guthrie comes across as a very naive person. Carol Willard is definitely a spoiled and greedy person. I would even go so far as to call the woman amoral, because she wants to kill her sister, you know, for money and for the husband. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Tim.
Hi, Kitty. Hi, Bob.
Hey.
Yeah, interesting show again. You know, when we've been talking about all these women in the first season, it got me thinking, and I said, you know, the success of this series really depended upon the women, you know, showing up in their different roles. I agree that, you know, you have the heroic ones, and then you have the kind of dumb ones, and then you have the really wacky ones. Mm-hmm. I agree with you, Kitty, on the garden house. I did not like that episode. I thought it was a little soap opera for me. And, you know,
the best part about that episode is that the evil sister gets shot and Kimball lets her die on the floor.
Yeah.
That's one of the times where we get to see Kimball, who shows himself to be the doctor I wouldn't want to have in a life or death situation.
Yeah, that episode did not work for me, and I thought they got away from the concept of the fugitive in that show. So I agree that when they showed women in that kind of a way, or they portrayed them in that way, it really did not work for me, and I was disappointed with episodes like that.
Yeah, well, and I was even more disappointed with the next episode, where it was that, well, its official title is Where the Action Is, but I like to call it Where the Action Isn't, because you had that obnoxious Chris Polachek.
Yeah.
Who just basically lives to make trouble, and you know, and she's just, and she's one of these women that just, it's actually almost like a fugitive fatal attraction thing, because Kimball wants nothing to do with this crazy person, and she keeps hanging around, and then at the end she ends up proposing marriage to her. I mean, or she proposes marriage to him. What is up with that?
Yeah, that was the Las Vegas episode, wasn't it?
No, it was Reno.
Reno,
yeah. And Kimball's in his bathing suit, and then he jumps in and saves the girl, or after she jumped in or whatever. Is that the episode,
He jumps in to save a somebody, not to save Chris Polachek, somebody else early in the episode.
Yeah, didn't she jump in, too?
No, he threw her in.
Oh, he threw her in.
Yeah. Remember, Kitty, that's the best part of the whole story.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he also hit her at one point, too, and I think she's the only woman he's ever actually hit, but she deserved it because she was being so obnoxious.
Yeah.
Yeah, he slapped her, and then he threw her in the pole.
Yeah. Well, again, I have to point out that when the series did episodes like that one, Where the Action Is, they got away from the basic concept of the fugitive, you know, Kimball on the run, being pursued. And when they did a soap opera like this, it did not work. And I agree with you. That was a bad episode, Kitty.
But those episodes are just filler. I mean, you can tell that they're just filler. They're doing 30 episodes a season in those days, as compared to 22 now. So there are times when they're just doing stories that really don't fit in with the basic premise of the series. I don't like it either. I do understand why they do it, however. I don't know that you can really stay with the basic topic week after week after week for 30 episodes. That's asking an awful lot. So there is a certain amount of filler in every TV series. There are weeks that you wonder, you know, what are you watching? What does this have to do with it? And you just kind of get beyond that. So they just take a week off. It's not very good. But in this particular, because The Fugitive is so intense, that it really shows up very badly when they do that. But this story is completely ridiculous. Not only is it ridiculous because this girl is completely obnoxious, but it has an absurd ending in which Kimball simply locks her and her father, played by Telly Savalas, in a room back at the police station or somewhere, I don't remember where they were, and makes them talk to each other, because the whole problem is that the father and the daughter can't communicate. So you have to sit there for an entire hour waiting to get to an obvious ending when it should have been done early on. Somebody should have spanked her and treated her like the child she really was, and that would have been the end of the story. So it's a waste of time for us to sit there and watch that when you know where it's going. And it gets there, and it's simply not interesting. She's one of the most irritating and annoying characters in the entire series, a woman or a man. It doesn't really matter. And, you know, she's just... It's almost impossible to watch it. It's that bad.
Yeah, well, and then the next, interestingly enough, though, that the next episode we get is Search in a Windy City, and we get Paula Decker, you know, who's, you know, granted she has a drinking problem, but she's still by no means a stupid person. She actually, in spite of her alcoholism, she ends up giving her husband a conscience, and it's because of that then he ends up tipping Kimball off that that Gerard's in the apartment with him.
Well, she's, you know, she reminds you a lot of Wilma Springer from Nightmare at North Oak. She's a heroic figure, but unlike Wilma Springer, she's a flawed heroic figure, because she does let her alcoholism get to her, and so you can't really feel quite the same way about her. She does do the right thing in the end, and she is the instrumental in Kimball being able to escape at the end of the story. Search in a Windy City is an outstanding episode. We're going to do a radio show completely on that story, because it's one of the best of the first season. And she's one of the few women in this part of the first season who you can really admire to some degree. She causes a lot of trouble in the story, but in the end she redeems herself by overcoming it. So there's something to be said for that, I think. And it's a really good performance, too.
Oh, I love that episode, Search in a Windy City. And Paula Decker, she made that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the beginning, you know, she meets Kimball, and Kimball has to stay overnight, and she's a little suspicious of him. But she did a lot of good acting. She had that tension, you know, because that was a really tense episode. Kimball was on nails, and he's looking for the one-armed man, and she added to the tension. And I love that scene she had with Gerard. Remember that?
Right.
Gerard's questioning her. Where's Kimball?
He gives her coffee and everything to bring her back around out of her alcoholic haze.
Yeah.
And he asks a lot of questions, and he kind of traps her into admitting that she knew more than she was letting on. But, anytime Gerard comes up against a woman who takes him on and holds her own, it's always a high point of any story.
Okay. Well, and the next person on the list is a lady by the name of Cora Bowden. She was...
What a bore.
What's that?
What a bore she is.
Oh. Well, you know, she's one of these people. This is in that episode called Bloodline, where it was about she was married to the son of this dog breeder, and they wanted the father to sell basically their breeding farm, the kennel, because she doesn't want to do this anymore. And I actually found her character to be, I guess if I was to describe her, I would call her one of the selfish women that he comes across, because, you know, here she is, she's saying how much she hates working in this kennel, and I'm, you know, you have to ask yourself, what was she expecting when she married this son? You know, because it's very apparent that this was a family-run business, and it's disconcerting, I think, immediately to the viewer with her, that she would go so far as to turn a dog loose into the wilderness and then actually want to put the dog to death, all so that she can protect the bloodline, and so that everybody will buy the bloodline, thinking that everybody's healthy, when in actuality this dog, what was it, the dog had hip dysplasia?
It was something, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, and so, of course, that affects whether or not you can do show dogs if a dog has
hip
dysplasia.
Well, I really disliked this episode, and if I remember correctly from the message board, I don't think Ken liked it either.
No, it was slow, and it just really went nowhere.
I know.
I mean,
well,
what?
I think in the end, what it was, I think the dog Colleen ends up stealing everybody's heart, though.
Yeah.
Well, I love dogs, but that story is a dog. It just didn't
All right, let's take a brief time out, if we will, and this is a real brief one, and then we'll come back for part two of The Women of the Fugitive when we continue to talk Fugitive on Retro Radio.
You're not talking Fugitive Tuesday evenings on KSAV. Tune in for Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae. Broadcast every other week at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, Susan interviews a variety of interesting guests from a broad spectrum of professions. A great beginning to a pleasant evening of listening enjoyment on KSAV. World-class radio on the World Wide Web.
KSAV if you want to join in the discussion, or email talk@ksav.org. Maybe I should check and see if there are any emails or not. Tonight at 7:30 is going to be Talking Television with Dave White, the one-year anniversary program. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I hope that you out there in the audience will stick around and join in. Bob, let's go back to you.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I just want to mention and congratulate you on behalf of myself and my co-host for surviving for an entire year.
That's well put.
We really love your show because without your show, this show would not exist.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
And you must remember back, I guess it was about a year ago that you came to somebody with an idea to talk about television on the radio, and they probably threw you out of the office, right?
Well,
so
no.
That's the most ridiculous idea we ever heard.
We're going to, listen, I won't use up your time, but we are going to discuss that tonight on the anniversary show.
Okay.
It
well,
wasn't quite like that, but we will talk about it. Thanks.
All right, go ahead, Kitty. You can continue with the list.
Okay, well, the next woman was a woman by the name of Lorna Grant from the episode Rat in a Corner, and she she's kind of an interesting character to me because she's one of these people where she's loyal to her brother, but she knows that her brother, Herbie, is a crook. You know, but by the same token, she still doesn't want him to go to prison. But by the same token, she doesn't want Kimball to go back to death row either. And it's interesting how she plays it all out.
Well, she's likable, but again, not terribly exciting.
Okay. Well, then we have Sister Veronica in a two-part episode called Angels Travel on Lonely Roads. And she's with Richard Kimball on that road, and we come to find out that she is on her way because she wants to renounce her vows. And she tells Richard Kimball that it's because somebody she was trying to help, and it never worked, so she tried the tough love route, and he left and ended up killing somebody and got executed for it. But Richard Kimball does eventually helps her to see that, you know, she still does help people, and she should continue to remain a nun, and she does.
Well, I have some problems with this episode. I mean, it's a two-part episode. And I like part two better than part one.
I don't really think it necessarily needed to be a two-part episode.
Yeah, I think there's just it's a little heavy-handed at times on the religious aspect, and there's just too much of it in there, and it just seems to go on and on and on forever. There are some good points. The best part about the episode is the actress who's playing Sister Veronica, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Eileen Heckert.
Right, Eileen Heckert, one of the great actresses ever, and this is a great performance. I mean, an outstanding performance. I can't say enough about the work she does in this episode. I'm not, the story itself doesn't thrill me, but it is fascinating to watch her. And while we're on that particular episode, and although I did not put her on the list.
Yeah, I was about to say you missed the lady.
Well, I the only reason I did that was because she doesn't really have a big part, but of course there is a woman in there. Her name is Janet. And played by Ruta Lee, I believe.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is going back to what Lee said in her email, one of the women who decides that Kimball's a pretty good-looking guy, and maybe he'd like to come and live with her. You can tell the story, you know, because you probably remember it more than I do.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she knows Kimball for 2 hours, and she's ready to settle down with him. You know, she's practically proposing marriage to him. And I really just sometimes wonder what is up with the sanity in these women. They meet a guy, and 2 hours later, they want to spend the rest of their lives with him. It's just a little bizarre.
Yeah, well, I liked her character. I thought she was very nice, and she's certainly pretty, and, looked like a pretty good deal to me that Kimball should probably take her up on it, but, you know.
But then he'd have that obnoxious brother-in-law to contend
with.
Yeah,
it's a little bizarre for her in the context of this story, having almost no contact with him, to simply stand there when they talk to each other, and she says, well, you know, she's lonely, running this little store up in the mountains or whatever that place was, and maybe he'd like to come and live with her. So, you know, how did you feel about this episode, Ken? I don't really remember. Did you like Angels Travel on Lonely Road?
Yeah, I liked it. It should have been just one part. I agree with that.
Yeah.
I like that scene. I think it was in part two. Sister Veronica's watching the TV, and then she finds out that Kimball is a fugitive, and he's on the run.
Right.
And her reaction, or her acting right there, was very good. I think the producers did a good job of casting her to play that part, and that was well done.
Well, my favorite part of that episode is when they meet those two creeps on the road, those two guys. when the motorcycles are...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's... she just... She shoots them a deadly look, and, you know, they just back off.
Well, and she also hit... Didn't she hit one of them? She slapped one of them?
I think she slapped him or grabbed some out of his hand or something. It's just...
Yeah.
You know, she just gave him a... And she read the riot act to them, telling them that she wouldn't put up with that kind of stuff from anybody. And it was kind of thing you would expect from her character, but still, that's really the high point of that episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Eileen Heckert is just a great actress. I mean, that was... Ken mentioned a couple weeks ago on the radio that they had great casting in this series. That's certainly true, and this is a case of great casting, without a doubt.
Well, then we also have Sophie in the next episode, Somebody to Remember.
Oh, I like Sophie.
I don't know. I mean, Sophie was definitely, I guess the adjective I would use for her would be opportunist. You know, she only likes somebody if there's something to be gained by it. And, in this case, she was hanging out with Gus because she knew he was going to die.
And the money aspect, too. She wanted the money.
Well, yeah. Like I said, she was an opportunist. You know, she only liked somebody if there was something to be gained by it. And in the end, she didn't rat Kimball out because she got the money.
She did a good job. I'll have to give her credit because that was a tension. I label episodes with certain words, and I call that one a tense one because, Gus is going to die, and then Gerard's in the wing, and then Kimball, he's dealing, you know, with Gus and Sophie and Gerard. And she did a good job. I like that episode. Somebody
Well, I did too, and I especially like Sophie because she's an example of television in the mid-60s and the restrictions as far as what you could talk about or how blatant you could be about things. I mean, let's face it, Sophie is very sexy, and Sophie is standing out on street corners wearing some very seductive clothing. She's wearing this top that's kind of falling off her shoulders, and she's standing out there. As I said in my review back when we did it, she's standing on street corners, and she's always has this soda in her hand, and she's sucking through a straw, and she's making eyes at everybody, including Kimball. And at one point, she even walks off with this guy she apparently knows, and they walk down an alleyway or somewhere. So it's all in your imagination. I mean, I think there's a lot more to Sophie than they actually were able to discuss in that episode. I saw that right away. And, she's kind of fun to look at. I mean, she's absolutely dreadful as a person. But I found her quite fascinating in that.
Okay. Well, the next episode is that one called The Homecoming. And we could probably put these two ladies together since they're the two in that episode, Janice Pruitt and Dorena Pruitt.
This is fingernails on a blackboard for me. This is unbearable.
You gave that a zero rating, didn't you, Bob?
Absolutely dreadful.
I didn't give it that high of marks. The way Dorena is portrayed, I never really quite understood why this daughter, Janice, was such a threat to her. It's not like Janice could break up their marriage or anything, so it just, you know, she was definitely a one-dimensional villain in that movie, or in that episode.
Even worse than that is that she's portrayed by Gloria Graham, who's really a famous movie actress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know whether it was her decision or the director's decision. She plays this part completely over the top. With this kind of a bizarre, overstated Southern accent, and it's just awful to watch. I mean, I can't even stand to look at it.
Yeah.
Can't even take it seriously because it's done so badly. This is one of those episodes for me that's not just bad, but I just want to run screaming out of the room. There's no way in the world to sit through. I will never watch that again, not ever.
That got the lowest rating on our message board. That episode.
Good.
It's really. Good. Because for me, where the action isn't is the worst. So, okay, well, and I know this is your personal favorite, Ken, Marcy King.
that was a soap opera.
A stupid one at that. I mean, it was supposed to be so melodramatic and everything, but when Marcy and Kimball went to kiss each other, I just started laughing hysterically because my reaction was one of, oh, give me a break. I mean, first the woman wants to kill him, then she wants to kiss him, then she wants to turn him in, then she wants to run away with him.
Well, some sort of lunatic wrote that episode. That was, you know, that was that took place in a hurricane, and ironically enough, at the same time we were reviewing that, I was actually in a hurricane. And my story was a lot. My story was a lot more compelling than that was. Let me tell you. So that was absolutely, totally dreadful. And coming right after the homecoming, I mean, this is enough reason to stop watching the show. This has got to be the lowest point of the series.
But you know, they're ending the season. Think of it. The producers, this is episode 29, they're ending the season with a lot of classics, you know, in the season.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then we get this right toward the end.
Oh, I know. It's a terrible decision.
Do they want the viewers to come back for season two
yeah.
or not?
The season should have ended with Search in a Windy City. That would have been enough to get everybody back.
Yeah, or even Never Wave Goodbye.
Kitty, go right away to the last person.
Okay.
Because we're running out of time, and
okay.
I have to get
on the end game, we have an unnamed prostitute, and I know that Bob wanted to say something about her.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the episode. This ends the season. This is where Kimball is in a dragnet. He's stuck in the city, and Gerard's on his back, and Kimball is staying with two old men who are bickering with each other, a part that I didn't particularly appreciate. But there was a great scene in the early part, I believe it's the end of the first act, where Kimball is trapped, and he's walking down a very dark, deserted street, and he sees this woman come out of a bar, and it's obvious right away that she's a prostitute. And they have a great little scene together where she walks up to him, and she treats him like a client. She kind of comes on to him. She even tries to kiss him at one point. And I love David Janssen's acting here. He smiles. He's a little embarrassed. And he does something most unusual in this episode, because she already knows, she saw him on TV, so she knows who he is, but she doesn't allow him to know that, and he needs to get her off his back. So he actually says to her at one point, if you remember, he says, "Oh, I'm a killer, I killed my wife." Now, you never hear him say that.
Yeah.
He never kids about that, he never says, he says it to her to get her off his back, and she really takes it seriously. She runs to a phone booth, and she calls up the police, and the next scene you see her talking to Gerard and the police station, and this is a great scene in which she sits in a chair smoking a cigarette in a very exaggerated manner, and she gives Gerard absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. He goes on and on and on about how he's got Kimball trapped this time, there's no getting away, and she looks at him, and one of my favorite lines, and she says, "If you're such a genius, why haven't you caught him yet?" And when
yeah.
she goes to leave, he says to her, "You can go." She walks past him, and I think she blows smoke in his face because he kind of waves his hand in front of his nose. It's a great scene, done by a woman named Martine Bartlett, who is one of those people that you know when you see her, but you don't know her name. A great character actress back from the 60s, who was in a lot of shows, and she always acted this way, always a great performance. This is one of those really, really good walk-on performances that comes and it goes before you know it. It has really little to do with the story. She's not really that important, but that is very memorable. So I would say that as far as being fun to watch certain characters, she's the one I enjoy the most. Nothing to be admired there about her, but that's a great performance. I always enjoy any time anybody, a man or a woman, can just go one-on-one with Gerard and get the upper hand. And when you sit there and watch her sitting in that chair, giving him those looks, you know he's met his match. He has total contempt for her. I don't know if you remember or not, he launches into a whole rant about how the reason Kimball gets away is because people keep helping him, especially women. It's almost like he's jealous.
All right, we've got to get away. When you return in 2 weeks, it's a new topic. What's that going to be, quickly?
Well, Landscape of Running Figures, the story that most of us, not all of us, but most of us consider to be the very best episode of the series, will be the first program of four consecutive programs.
All right, and I hope all of you will be back with us on the 13th for number one in that episode. Bobby and Ken and Kitty, thanks a lot. Everybody else, stay tuned for Perfectly Frank and a one-hour talk in television with Dave White, all here tonight on Sherevision Radio.